Good morning, and welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, partner in charge of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. We created the center in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at www.businessofgovernment.org. The Business of Government Radio Show Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our special guest this morning is Major General, retired, Charles Williams, Director of the Overseas Building Operations at the U.S. Department of State. Good morning, General Williams.
Good morning, Paul.
And joining us in our conversation also from IBM is Kim Hinsman. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Paul.
Well, General Williams, let's start by learning more about the Overseas Building Operations. Could you tell us about the office and when and why it was created?
The office was created in order to provide leadership and oversight over the property management in the State Department. The Overseas Buildings Operation, which has been basically named over the last 3.5 years, was put in place in order to provide a sharper focus to the mission and function I just described.
Can you give us a sense of the approximate value of the owned and leased property under the control of OBO?
The portfolio today is about $12 billion.
Numbers and people who work with you on your team?
Well, the number of people that we serve are massive, quite frankly. 40,000 people or so stationed around the world, 260 separate locations, cities that we serve. We have over 16,000 properties in that whole mass of responsibility.
And what's the annual operation and maintenance budget to keep these properties?
Today is slightly under $500 million.
General Williams, what are your responsibilities and duties as the director of the Overseas Building Operations?
That's a good question, because this is a massive responsibility. As I mentioned before, we have 260 locations around the world where we have facilities. My specific responsibility in broad strokes is to manage the property portfolio around buying, selling, leasing, designing, billing, and maintaining the facilities that I've just described. And I mentioned that it's 16,000.
So can you describe your organization's relationship with other agencies and organizations?
That's a very important point, Kim, and I appreciate the question, because it is often misunderstood that the State Department facility or facilities and the individuals who work in the facilities are not all State Department people. We serve a multitude of agencies. I like to view the facility as a platform. It's a platform from which the U.S. government can project its foreign policy, and that entails the housing of many agencies and activities.
You've had an honorable career in the Army, and you were retired prior to accepting this position. Can you describe your previous experiences before becoming the director of OBO and talk about what it was like to go back into the workforce?
Kim, that's very interesting, because I am a recycle, if you will. I kid sometime with my boss, Secretary Powell. Both of us are the same. My previous background, quite frankly, prepared me quite well for this. I was fortunate to have a nice blend of about 30 years in the military, serving in the Army Corps of Engineers, doing exactly what I'm doing now, just a little different spin. I built a lot of things, managed huge projects. And then, of course, while in the private sector, I was wonderfully blessed to have the opportunity to be chosen to run a very large school program in New York City, a very tough location to do the work. And then, of course, to manage and build the first private toll road in the state of Virginia, the Greenway. So a combination of these two experiences and having the opportunity to blend the management concepts of both, I think prepared me quite well for this delicate function.
You went through your background and you talked to us about your different project management experiences. I'm curious how you would compare undertaking large projects in the military and in the private sector.
Well, naturally, Paul, they are different, but they are connected in several ways. Project management is project management. You basically controlling the outcome of a project. The private sector has a sharper closure to its projects because it's more results-based than I would say the time that I served in the military. But having the combination of both and have gone through each one of the experiences, I could see where there's strengths on both sides. The government is very methodical and process-oriented. The private sector is more results-based, and, of course, durations and timelines are shorter. A combination of all of that makes for a better manager once you have had the experience of going through them.
How about the decision-making process in both, in terms of speed and crispness? How would you compare those?
It's interesting because while in the government, it's process-driven, and the process is a little bit more, I wouldn't say convoluted, but it is crowded. In the private sector, the organization has more of a flat structure. Pinpointing responsibility and management cells a little bit easier to connect to the responsible director or leader, and that would be the sharpest contrast. Decision making in the private sector quicker, and obviously the lines are shorter. On the government side, it's a little bit more process driven, and obviously takes a little longer.
What drew you back to public service?
A call from a very dear friend named Colonel Powell. And if you've not been on the other end of a telephone call when this gentleman calls you, you have no idea what I'm talking about.
Well, fill us in. What's the line that persuades you to return?
Well, first of all, he is a person that I admire as not only as an individual but as a servant of our country. Paul, he's done an enormous job for our country. I know him. I know his style. It was just a unique situation that he's a few years senior to me and in the military, and he had always, for whatever reason, I had always been somewhat associated with things that he either managed or he had been associated with. When he was Corps commander in Germany, I had the responsibility as a colonel to retrofit all of the new firing ranges in Germany. This was arranged to accommodate our new family of vehicles that was engaged in the Gulf War. So Secretary Powell, then Lieutenant General Powell, knew of my work at that point. Then, of course, when I was in my division command responsibility, upstate New York in Fort Drum, I had the opportunity to bail a complete city. This was a small mini city, if you will, post as we call it in the military. The commander who inherited that responsibility was now Secretary Powell. Once again, in a position where he could observe exactly what I had done. And then, of course, when I retired and went back to the private sector, I was in New York City building schools at a $4 billion budget. Lots of schools to rebuild and rehabilitate. One of those schools was in South Bronx, and it was Morris High School. And one of the distinguished graduates of Morris High School was Colonel Powell. So I often say this when I'm engaged in discussions like this and interviews or whatever, is that this man probably knows more about what I have done and what I cannot do than anyone. So long story to give you sort of an answer as to why he may have called, but I'm proud he did.
Judging from your career, in addition to Secretary Powell, I'm assuming you've been around lots of other really strong leaders. And I'm curious, what makes a leader effective from your perspective?
I think, Paul, this is very good because I spend a lot of time thinking about leadership. And that's the real foundation, I think, to making an organization go. An effective leader is a leader that knows how to select people to work with him or her. Understand that in order to get the maximum from a subordinate, there has to be mutual trust and respect. In other words, you have to trust the subordinate. You have to cut the subordinate loose and let them run. Let them be creative. Let them work. Secretary Powers has a lot of secret leadership traits. But one that is very profound as far as I'm concerned, he gives one big responsibilities, and then he steps back and allow the manager that he has hired or entrusted with that to do his or her job. And I don't have to go to him and say, boss, can I do this? He doesn't want me to do that. He wants me to make it happen, and then he holds me accountable for the result. That's what makes Colin Powell effective, and that's my construct of a effective leader, and I try to practice that.
Interesting point, especially about the cutting loose. The State Department is undertaking a large-scale overseas construction project. What have we learned, and why are we doing this? We'll ask General Charles Williams of the U.S. State Department to tell us about this when the Business of Government Hour returns.